2012. And the first item on our agenda today is Senator Carlson's bill. It's Senate File 1780. Welcome to our committee, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Senator John Carlson, Senate District 4. Before we get started, Madam Chair, if I could, I would like to move the A2 amendment, please.
Senator Fischbach moves the A2 amendment. It is in our folder. Oh, wait, I have the A1 amendment.
Is it the A1? It might be the A1, Madam Chair.
Does it say, in addition, the board shall pay for Treasury operations services provided by the Commissioner of Management and Budget?
That's the one.
Go
to the A1, then.
Senator Fischbach moves the A1 amendment. Senator Carlson, do you want to explain that quickly?
Yes, Madam Chair and members, the A1 amendment simply adds some technical language that any time there is any interaction between MMB and admin and the Office of Enterprise Technology, we needed to make sure that that language was in there appropriately as MNSCU works through MMB and some of the technical back office procedures.
Just wanted to note that we do have a quorum. Are there any questions about the A1 amendment? If not, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The motion is adopted. Senator Carlson, do you want to explain your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think to do the bill the best service, I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Laura King.
Ms. King.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Laura King, and I'm the Vice Chancellor for Finance for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities.
Ms. King, would you pull that mic a little closer, please?
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Laura King, and I'm the Vice Chancellor for Finance for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. And thank you to Senator Carlson for helping us with this bill. Let me just take a minute, if I might, and explain what our object is. The bill provides for an amendment to Chapter 136F, which allows us to clear up some confusion that hurt our ability to operate last spring, hurt our ability to serve our employees and our students. It levels the playing field between the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, the University of Minnesota, the private college councils, private colleges, and the for-profit colleges. And it allows us to access our own funds. There's no need to add an appropriation. There's no request for new funds in this bill. It simply clarifies current statute allowing us access to our existing receipts. The objective of the amendment is to clarify current law with its force and effect by providing us access to our already appropriated receipts, technical and administrative support per Chapter 16A, and clear continued operational authority. MNSCU has twice argued successfully that existing law enables us access to our tuition and fee balances held in the state treasury. This argument relies both upon 136F74 and 16A1286, where it's provided that the board may carry over any unexpended balances from its appropriation from 1 year of the biennium into the second year of the biennium, and further that the board may carry balances from one biennium to the next biennium. In 16A1286, it provides that we are to pay Minnesota Management and Budget and their statewide systems account, which is referenced in the amendment before you today, for the purposes of supporting the state accounting system, payroll system, human resources system, procurement, and related information access systems. We have been paying the Department of Finance since this charge was established back when I was a finance commissioner in 1996. So that's right. The boot is on the other foot now. We pay MMB over $1 million a year as a customer of the state accounting and payroll systems, and the amendment and the arguments we've made on this matter in prior years have supported that argument as being a further reason to recognize our effective autonomy. And further, in 135A, current statute provides that the board shall strive to provide uninterrupted service to students. In June 2001, the then Department of Finance signed an agreement with us enabling us to access our cash for payroll and vendor obligations. That was at the time of another near shutdown. In the end, the higher ed bill was signed and the agreement was not required. Having the agreement in place enabled us to assure our students and our customized training clients that we were going to be open for business in the summer, notwithstanding what they were reading in the newspaper about the general state of legislative negotiations. In June of 2011, Governor Dayton included Minskew in his legal filings, citing our statutory and practical financial autonomy and our balanced carry-forward authority as the rationale to remain open and continue operations during the state shutdown. In both instances, we were required to invest in legal support and executive and board time to make the case and communicate with our public and our employees. We host the Office of Enterprise Technology on 19 campuses, and through our buildings, travel, support for statewide public safety, statewide K-12 systems, and statewide city and county government. Our customized training programs run 12 months a year with over 6,000 business contracts in place. We would have had to have stopped that work right at the height of the summer activity. Our students had paid tuition and many had received financial aid. We could have been in the position of having to refund tuition and recapture federal financial aid dollars. It's likely that we would have substantially damaged students' eligibility for financial aid and had an administrative nightmare on our hands. In early June of 2011, we had already registered 100,000 students for fall term and would ordinarily spend June and July finishing fall registrations. An interruption of this work would have been financially devastating to Minskew. The students would have registered at St. Mary's or St. John's or the university or one of the for-profit colleges, and they would have been lost to the public system, likely forever, according to research. We had hundreds of international students living in our dorms with no means of returning home, and our situation is further complicated by the fact that we have a mix of labor agreements in our organization. Some 35% of our employees are governed by contracts negotiated by the executive branch, and the remaining 65% of our employees are governed by labor contracts that we negotiate directly. So there was much confusion in the public square about the condition for employees, the status of layoff notices, who was issuing layoff notices, who could issue recall notices. It was a time of tremendous confusion. The proposed language would provide explicit authority for MMB to maintain our access to payroll, accounting, and vendor services and preserve our relationship in support of the statewide IT platform. We would pay MMB a daily rate for those services calculated on the basis of the $1 million that we presently pay them, and it is our understanding that there would be little or no incremental cost for these services if one assumes that the payroll and accounting systems are up and online anyway. You'll see in the fiscal note that there's a very modest daily cost calculation included, and the language that you just put on in the amendment makes clear that to the extent there's costs that travel from MMB to the Department of Administration, MMB has the authority to transfer part of our daily payment to the Department of Administration. We think this proposal is in the state's interest, and we hope that we have your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. King. Do members have questions? Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, maybe I could direct a question to the author, Senator Carlson. Senator Carlson, when this was attempted before, not this particular bill, but when there was an effort to pass so-called lights on legislation, not last year, 2011, but in 2009.
Senator Cohen, could you move closer?
I'm sorry. What I was asking Senator Carlson, I apologize if I wasn't speaking to the mic. When this effort, not this particular bill, but when this general effort was attempted in 2009 and in 2005, it was suggested in criticism of the then Democratic majority in the Senate that the attempt was to place government on autopilot. How do you respond to that criticism?
Well,
Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair and Senator Cohen, as you know, I wasn't in the Senate at that time.
Right, that's why I thought it would be.
I was still coaching Little League and hockey, so I
But Madam Chair, that's exactly why I asked you, Senator Carlson, because you weren't in the Senate at that time. One, you're the author, so you're sitting there, but also you were not in the Senate at the time, and that's why I thought you might have a less jaundiced perspective than maybe others of us at the table.
Jaundice?
Senator Carlson, did you want to respond?
Madam Chair and Senator Cohen, thank you for that question. Absolutely. I think that in the case of Minsky, in the case of this particular bill, that they have a level playing field with the University of Minnesota and all of the colleges, private colleges and for-profit colleges in the state of Minnesota. It would be unconscionable for us to put them at a disadvantage by the situation that they were put in last year. And so this bill would eliminate that possibility and really further follow the statutes as they are written and as Governor Dayton identified and realized on June 15th when he issued his order. So I think this is really in the best interest of Minnesota, its students, and students at Minsky.
Well, Madam Chair and
Senator
Carlson, I'm not immune to the distinctions, and certainly I recognize that, as you suggest, the university has this constitutional autonomy, and we can debate how far that lets us go or not go, but certainly that distinguishes the university from Minsky. Obviously, the private schools are separate from, with the exception of state students having access to the grant loan program. That the private schools are in a different category. But how would we then, if you allow me to be a little bit philosophical, because it gets away from your legislation directly, how would we distinguish that argument then if we talk about, say, state workers and the disadvantage they're placed at in contrast to workers in private industry? I mean, that argument can be made then up and down with all facets of government. And I'm not sure, and Madam Chair, this might be a little bit unfair with Senator Carlson sitting up there. He's the first person with one of these bills. Maybe the question is better directed toward yourself, Madam Chair. But Senator Carlson, if you might, how would we distinguish then? Because I don't think I looked at the bills that I think have been authored, and there could be others that I haven't seen, but I don't think we have a comparable bill for, say, the Department of Human Services. So how would we distinguish those workers in the public sector versus the private sector? I mean, they're at the same disadvantage, aren't they?
Senator Carlson, did you want to answer?
Madam Chair and Senator Cohen, I think it would be best for me to keep my remarks to my bill. That's the one I'm familiar with. And so I think that if you would like to ask that of each and every one of the bills that come forward, that would certainly be your prerogative.
And Senator Cohen, one of the things that you'll be seeing about today's bills is they all have their own sources of revenue, that they aren't coming mainly. I mean, their main sources of revenue do not come from the general fund, and so you were asking about human services and such, and that would be one of the reasons. And as far as the comparison between the private and the public sector, people in the private sector are not immune to layoffs at all. It happens all the time in the private sector, and it may be a slowdown of work. I know people who are seasonally laid off, or they're laid off when their production lines slow down, and so they're not immune to it. It's not something that doesn't happen infrequently.
But Madam Chair, in the normal course of public sector employment, the same things happen. There are layoffs, there are seasonal employees, and so on. So I would argue that's a distinction without a difference. But Madam Chair, since you choose, I think it's probably fair to not dismiss Senator Carlson from this debate, but certainly his bill deals with a particular issue. Maybe I could – I noticed Commissioner Showalter's here. He might have the broadest testimony to offer overall because, obviously, as Commissioner of Management and Budget, he would take a look at the overall budget, which none of these bills do. Secondly, he's the person who's been involved at the center of the shutdowns, the so-called shutdowns, more than anybody else in state government over these last number of years, both in his capacity now as commissioner, but previously as the budget director. So he might have a broader perspective, but since you chose to answer me, maybe I can engage you in debate because, again, all these bills deal with – I mean, the argument relative to Senator Carlson can be made with any of the other authors. So what about my general question, which is when this attempt was made previously, criticism was we were placing government on autopilot. And I don't recall you standing up on the floor making that argument. You very well could have, but certainly some of your colleagues made that argument.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Cohen, I think Dr. King made some really important points about the Minsky system. And I think various aspects of government are different, but the huge number of people that are being served and who are paying the tuition, you know, it's the total disruption of that and how to manage through it and even come out, you know, with any kind of semblance of stability. It doesn't mean that this is going to prevent layoffs. That can go up and down regardless of whether we're having complications with the budget or not. And so depending on the number of students, there are probably going to be layoffs. I don't see how it becomes a pure autopilot because it's very dependent on students making choices to attend various programs in all of these institutions. And they have to come, and they have to pay out their money, and that's the money that you're using to operate the building. That's part of the rationale for suggesting that, you know, since it's not, you're not talking about the general fund money here at this point, you're talking about what the monies that they have in that collection. So I don't know what's autopilot unless everybody is programmed in their brains that they're going to be going to Minsky and that continues on per se, but it doesn't. So,
Senator Cohen, and you know they would eventually run out of money. But they're saying that as much as it can be prevented, because they do have their own resources, they would like to be able to continue the operations. So, and in fact, the governor agreed with that. He signed that order on June 15th so that they did not end up being caught up in the shutdown.
And Madam Chair and Senator Olson, I'm not necessarily disagreeing with the particular bill because I understand – I mean, I dealt extensively with higher education when I was in your position and was on the higher ed division for a number of years up until about 4 years ago. So I'm not disagreeing. I think I probably should apologize. I think when I used the word jaundiced, I really upset Senator Higgins, and that kind of skewed the debate.
Yeah, well, we were checking our skin.
So let me try to more cogently express my question, and that is that – I was hoping when we had these bills in front of us, we could also engage in a more general debate about, you know, the, quote, autopilot kind of issue to maybe separate a little bit from the particular bills. Because, I mean, and certainly it is – I don't mean to be dismissive of Senator Cruyff's bill, number 4 on the calendar, electrical inspections continued operation. I mean, obviously, that's some important work too. But when you contrast that to the broad scale – mission of Minsky and the number of people served, et cetera, you know, that would obviously pale by comparison. But that's what I'm wondering, because we do have a lot of separate bills, if there's going to be any avenue for debate on the larger issue of when we face these kinds of situations, should we pick places that have a revenue stream separate from general fund? And by the way, Minsky doesn't have a revenue stream from general fund. They collect revenue dedicated, obviously, but they deal with the general fund as well. I mean, all these, I think there's a mixture of general fund and dedicated funds in all of these. I think most of these bills. But, I mean, is there any opportunity for the broader discussion?
Well, there are bills introduced, and we aren't hearing them today. But if we do, we will be able to have that broader discussion about you know, there's some that are introduced that we would keep operating at 70% or 80% or 90%, and I think there's one that's at 100%. I don't know for sure if we're going to be taking those up or not, but We wanted to take care of some of these that we really believed had funds to continue operation without a general fund appropriation, at least for time, and to cause the least disruption in people's lives, because we realized, you know, that there were complications. There could have been a big issue here for Minsku. The governor took care of it. We want to take care of it now just in case this would happen again in the future.
Well, Madam Chair, just to conclude, far be it from me to – far be it from – that's actually a useless phrase, because if I wasn't going to continue, I wouldn't say far be it from me. So, yeah, so ignore that phrase, because would it not be a better idea to then maybe start from the general and work to the particular? I was going to say far be it from me to suggest what the agenda should be for the committee, but I am suggesting, I guess whether or not it'd be better to work from the general to the particular as opposed to starting with the particular, so we would have that overview discussion. Well, you're suggesting we might not even get to that.
Senator Olson.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Cohen, in many arenas, I've been a part of those debates of the where you start, part to whole or whole to part or general to particular. I think that this is a good exercise because we're looking at areas that have unique missions, and we deal if we debate and discuss and understand and agree to provisions for particulars. When we get past that, we might see that there is some overarching general thing. There may not, because this may not deal with everything. But if we feel it should, then we've built ourselves a better case by having dealt with them as individuals. I think you can argue either side if you want to, for those who are more philosophical, but if you are taking the time to look at some of the particulars, such as Minsku and its uniqueness versus what part of the parks or whatever, then it allows us to focus in on just what those consequences are, where the revenue is, and sort those out and deal with them, I think, more effectively.
Madam Chair.
I would argue for this approach rather than starting with some big picture.
Madam Chair.
Senator Langseth.
I kind of think what this committee should do is hear all these bills, hear all the bills that pertain to shutdown, and then decide what to do rather than passing some out now before we hear the rest of them. You know, it was natural, I think, that some of these bills would appear after what happened last summer. But I really am concerned about the fact that it could be gridlock from, if we continue with split government, we could have a situation where we don't pass budgets. So I don't know. I really think this committee should take a look at all of them before they pass any of them out, so that we kind of have an idea what we're going to do. And I'm not going to be here next year, but I am concerned about setting up a situation where it invites gridlock, because there are not severe consequences like there was last summer. So, I'm not the chair. I'm not telling you what to do. I just think if I were the chair, I think I would hear all the proposals before I passed any of them out.
Senator Fischbach.
Madam Chair, when we're going at it this way and looking at these individual bills, we're allowing these authors and the represented groups to make their case and understand that this is a particular, in particular with Senator Carlson's bill in Minsku, this is a very special case. And I think Ms. King and Madam Chair, you mentioned that the last year the governor okayed it so that there was no issue, but it happened twice. I believe it was Ms. King who mentioned. Right. Both of the times that they were facing the issues, the governors allowed them to continue. And so I think that this is an excellent way to handle it, given that we are able to hear the particulars of, in this case, Minsku, and then there's others on the agenda day. But I think this is important. This is something that we need to do for Minsku in particular with this bill, just because it is it's been dealt with twice, and both times we faced issues, and now we're able to solve those issues.
And Senator Langseth, I think you're expressing an interest to continue pressure, but I think a lot of us don't want to have the pain, the pressure can still be there. They will still need their general fund appropriation. I mean, we can't go on indefinitely looking at this bill today without doing a general fund appropriation. And I think that's true with most of these, maybe not the electrical inspectors, or the trunk highway fund might be similar because that money comes in from other sources. But, you know, this one in particular, it gives them some time to get, you know, go through their summer, get their enrollment going for fall so they're not shutting down. But eventually the pressure would be there. They would need that appropriation from us. So they're using their tuition money and their fund balances to keep operating. And we'd have to come back and do an appropriation.
Madam Chair.
Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, do you think, just relative to what Senator Langseth and I have suggested, I understand that, Madam Chair, that you'd like to handle this in a way differently than we might. But before we vote on this bill, as we get into these bills, do you think we could have the opportunity to listen to the Commissioner of Management and Budget, who would have the broadest overall sense of the state budget in terms of this approach? Would that be possible?
I see he's here, and if he would like to come and testify, he may.
Okay.
Good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Jim Showalter, Commissioner of Management and Budget. I appreciate the chance to just make a few comments because, as you all have been discussing, this is a very difficult issue. A couple of just considerations. Having been on the executive branch side, realizing some of the dispute and debate in the past about spending on autopilot, as well as the discussion here today, it really is at its core an executive branch versus legislative branch sort of dispute as to, you know, what are the roles and responsibilities and how do you divvy those up. One other things that I, having gone through this a couple of times in 2001, planning for a potential shutdown, in 2005, doing a partial shutdown, and then in my role as commissioner for the pretty much virtual shutdown of state government, understand pretty acutely is how fractured the authorities and uncertain the direction that the legislature is giving the executive branch in the event of a shutdown. So I guess my overarching recommendation and request would be to think about that broad policy as to what you're are trying to do with in the event of a shutdown, because the basics, even something as basic as what is the executive branch, is not particularly clear in law. We have two or three different definitions of what the executive branch is. If the governor is responsible for managing the executive branch and the authorities and during that period with certain emergency authorities or certain duties for the public safety, even just a starting point as to what exactly he or she is supposed to be responsible for would be a good place to start. Beyond that, I think it's unclear, even just in this discussion, if we're talking about whether somebody has money and that's good enough to keep on spending it so that the legislature has a sort of de facto, if you got cash, you can spend it approach. Is it a public safety, health and wellness kind of approach, or something in between based upon the statutory appropriation or the language that's in the appropriation bill. Trying to implement these things, we've ended up having to balance all three of them. They go to the courts, and then all of these arguments are on the table. So I just I respect each of the bills that are coming forward. I can understand completely where they're coming from. I just would hope that the Finance Committee would also step back and say, what is the overarching approach and balance between this legislative executive branch issue?
And this is a multi-day discussion. We realize that we only could have five bills on the agenda at a time just because of the length of time we know they take when we're discussing them. But we certainly will continue to have that discussion, and I know Senator Nenow and others have bills that look at the broader policy as well. But I think this is a member's attempt. You know, the special master made the call on a lot of things. And I think as legislators, we're saying now, looking at these, maybe we should be making the call. You know, the governor actually got to make the call on this particular one. But then the special master made decisions on, like, the zoo. And I think that's why we're saying we should be talking about that. Do we want to keep the zoo open in case of a shutdown? And we can have that discussion here. And I think it's good to have these one at a time right now, because they were made one at a time during that shutdown process. And we as policymakers should be looking at these issues. And if we put them all together, they do kind of get lost in the bigger picture of things. But not to say that we won't look at a bigger picture, because I understand the concern, you know, if it gets too piecemeal, or we make decisions that if you have your special funds, health and safety issues, what will we exactly choose to continue operations on? And we're really hoping that this never happens again in any of our time here. But knowing that we looked at it in 2001, it happened in 2005, and it certainly happened in 2011, I think it's good just to have these discussions and be prepared in case it does happen at some time in the future. Senator Cohen?
Madam Chair, I mean, I think the discussion between you and the commissioner that raises kind of accentuates some of those concerns. The commissioner talks about whether or not health and safety should be a priority in terms of determining what continues. Obviously, if we pass all of these bills on this separate basis without taking into account some of the broader concerns raised by the commissioner, then we are making those choices for future legislatures. And I'm not unsympathetic to your argument, Senator, certainly Senator Nino's argument, that having a special master make those decisions flies in the face of legislative and executive branch authority to have some single person serving as this special master. But that being the case, let's just take, we appropriated money, I think, in the early plenty years for the bird flu, and something that never really materialized. So what happens, but that was clearly viewed at the time as a very significant public health problem, whenever that took place, 10 years ago or so, 9 years ago. So what happens if there's the immediacy of something like that, and now we have put into statute a number of things that then would preclude our ability to deal with that issue? Say we're facing that hypothetical issue, that public health issue, in the immediacy of a shutdown. Now we've taken away, arguably, some of our ability to deal with that. And that's why I think Commissioner Showalter talks about the priority of, say, health and safety, which I would argue these bills don't deal with.
Madam Chair.
Well, Senator Cohen, we're not taking away, and I don't understand the bird flu analogy, but we're not taking away the issue further, of someone, of a special master. I mean, we haven't, at this point, that's not in our plan. But lessening their work certainly would be part of the plan here, so that things are predetermined on some of these issues. Senator Olson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is important, I think, that we engage in this policy debate, but the reality is that even with these separate bills, we don't make that decision in isolation. It does have to be in cooperation with the executive branch, because the governor has to sign them in order for them to become law. So it's not totally isolated, but it does engage us in it. And I think the presentation that was made initially on this is that we're dealing with issues and agencies that have resources from outside of the general fund. Bird flu doesn't apply to any of those. It would be general fund, and that's the issue that we're dealing with. And if we manage, as we will be ending this session, with the money in a budget reserve as well as cash flow, if there were such an emergency that came up, that one might have some revenue to deal with, absent any other great improvements in our economic picture. But we're talking about money that is generated largely on user fees or those who are participating. And why would we shut that down? And we've had any number of we'll have some more discussions, and I think we ought to get on with it. The sooner we get on with looking at some of these, I think then we will get to the point where we can try to draw if there's some broad general principles that, should also be in place covering it.
Senator Ingerperson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I could just ask a couple questions that maybe the people that would be watching this on TV today that are actually sending us down here to do some common sense stuff. Commissioner, do I totally understand then that during a shutdown, the University of Minnesota continues?
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, as the University of Minnesota is a separate constitutional entity.
And Minskew would
Senator
be shut down.
Madam Chair, Senator, the Minskew is, depending on your definitions and legal authorities, it is arguably part of the executive branch.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Senator Ingerperson.
Just a comment. If I was on the outside looking in at this and knowing that my tax dollars are going to pay for the University of Minnesota and those students are going to continue to be able to participate in their work, and that those same tax dollars are going to Minskew, and all of a sudden the brakes are on, they're not going to be able to attend school. People don't understand that. They really don't understand that. That's foolish. I mean, there's the real difference, and that's a significant difference why this bill is here versus just doing a whole blanket. The bottom line is the University of Minnesota is on autopilot, and the Minskew is not. This would put an even playing field out there for those who go to Minskew who are being paid for by the same dollars. So, Madam Chair, I would like to see this move forward, and I would ask for a roll call vote as well.
Senator Newman, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, Senator Ingebrigtsen has dragged us back out of the weeds, and we are back on the bill, so now I'm happy again.
Okay, thank you.
Chair.
Senator Cohen, I think we're trying to get back to the bill at hand here.
At the risk of making Senator Newman unhappy, I apologize ahead of time. But so it sounds like the distinction is general fund versus dedicated funds. That's the distinction. And, Madam Chair, if that's
for
the
case. For today's hearing.
Well, for today's hearing, but if that's the case, if that's going to be the distinction of general fund dollars, and Senator Ingebrigtsen talked about Minskew, didn't get into K-12, which has an open and standing appropriation, but still operates with significant general fund dollars that have not been appropriated. So that suggests we make sure we take care of the higher ed system, but not the K-12 system. But if the distinction is general fund dollars versus user fees, dedicated funds, then the slew of legislation we'll see will be making every general fund dollar in some way a dedicated fund dollar. And that'll be the next step.
Well,
apologize,
Chair,
Senator Newman.
Madam Chair, Senator Cohen, you'll have to take care of that next year. Some of us aren't going to be around to muddle in that stuff. I think this makes sense, and I think we should get on with it and listen to the other bills. I agree with Senator Newman.
Madam Chair,
one last
response.
Comment.
When Senator Olson says some of you won't be around next year, she makes it sound like a threat.
I don't feel threatened, Madam Chair. I don't feel threatened.
Madam Chair, I really appreciate the amount of I'm sorrys that Senator Cohen has been saying lately and apologizing. I really appreciate that.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move Senate File 1780 be recommended to pass and send to the floor.
As amended.
On Senator Perry's motion, as amended, and a roll call vote has been requested. Clerk will take the roll.
Senator Bonhoff?
Yes.
Senator Cohen?
No.
Senator Fischbach?
Yes.
Senator Goodwin?
Pass.
Senator Hahn?
Yes.
Senator Higgins?
No.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Yes.
Senator Langseth?
No.
Senator Magnus?
Yes.
Senator Newman?
Yes.
Senator Nienau?
Yeah.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Perry?
Yes.
Senator Stumpf?
No.
Chair Roebling?
Yes. Ask the person who passed it.
Senator Goodwin, would you like to vote?
Yes. The answer is vote is no. The answer is yes, the vote is no.
On a vote of 10-5, the motion does prevail, and Senate 1780 will be placed on general orders. Thank you, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Our next bill up, we're changing the order just slightly. Senator DeKreif has three bills, and we're going to start with Senate File 1844. Welcome, Senator DeKreif.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. Senate File 1844 is a bill essentially to keep the Minnesota Zoo open and agree with the special master, essentially. The Minnesota Zoo generates funds that are deposited in a dedicated fund for the operation and maintenance of the zoo. Last year, some employees of the zoo were deemed essential by the special master for the care and feeding of the animals. The special master agreed to allow the zoo to be open to customers, and the facility was closed to the public only a couple of days. I think we should agree with the special master and allow the special fund to be to dispense money to operate the zoo, which will be administered by the Department of Management and Budget. Common sense would also suggest that while the expense continues for this venue from the funds, visitors should also be allowed to visit the zoo, and the funds continue to come in.
Thank you, Senator DeKreif. As you will note in the fiscal note, there is no cost on the bill. It does have some assumptions in there. It talks about the average revenue generated on a typical July day. Is almost $50,000, and so they do have revenue other than general fund dollars as well. And as Senator DeKreif noted, they do have expenses that are ongoing with the care of the animals. Are there any questions about the bill?
Well, Madam Chair, it seemed like we're doing now is passing bills that we've been able to take care of when there was a shutdown. I think there's a little politics in this, and if you vote against the previous bill, you're against Minsky. If you vote against this one, you're against the zoo. And yet a comprehensive plan as to how to handle this is the way to handle it rather than the specific ones. But I guess I'm not going to be here next year anyway, so if I cast a bad political vote, it doesn't matter. But it just seems to me like this is the wrong approach. I think having all these bills in is the right approach. And I think this committee should deal with the whole issue before they pass out things piecemeal. And I suppose maybe these bills are going to go to the governor piecemeal. I'm not sure how he would handle it, but it sure seems to me before the end of session we should have a comprehensive plan as to what we do in a shutdown, and not just, I mean, is the zoo more important than other things that are not going to be dealt with here? I just think this piecemeal approach is the wrong approach. Obviously, I think Minsky should be able to keep going as it was, but I still think it's the wrong approach, and obviously, if I were running for re-election, I would be against Minsky, and I would be against the zoo, and I would be against all this other stuff because the facts on my voting record showed it. So I do somewhat resent it. I think the statesmanlike way of doing this is a comprehensive plan, and we are not doing that.
And I know that issue is continuing to be worked upon. But we do have these authors who have brought forward these bills addressing specific issues, and we wanted to have these bills heard as well. There really is a very lengthy list of bills to review, and I know people have specific concerns about certain areas that they want to have some discussion on, and so I thought it was appropriate to bring it to the committee. Senator Bonna.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would agree with Senator Langseth. As I voted for that last one, and I actually do think Minsky is different because I think it is, in essence, a separate entity that is running parallel to the University of Minnesota, and we take great pride in having not just the University of Minnesota but the MinSCU system, and so it didn't seem appropriate to cut that avenue off to our students when those students at the University of Minnesota were able to continue with their studies. But this one, then I get back to what Senator Lancet's saying. Like, of course, what, you're going to vote against the animals? And number one, well, I think we have to feed the animals. We don't want to starve the animals and have something happen to them under our watch. So, of course, I would want to have any money that would be necessary to feed them. But then you get to the point of, oh, but then the visitors can come. Well, then is it fair that we keep operations going so visitors can come if we aren't taking care of our obligations to our safety net, for example, in Health and Human Services? And so that's where I then have to stand back and say, what is our overall policy and procedure with regard to shutdowns? And I think that we as a legislative body should have that thoughtful discussion. And I think if we do these piece by piece, we can't really have the strategic, thoughtful discussion. We're more kind of playing defense and saying, well, you know, where do you draw the line? Feeding the animals, visiting the animals. And I don't think that that really is commensurate with the level of thinking that goes on and the what we're capable of as a bipartisan legislature. So I don't know how I'll end up voting on this one, because I'm certainly not going to vote not to feed the animals. But I think that we're having the wrong values if we pass a bill that says we should visit the animals, but you know, we aren't taking action on what we're doing with regard to some of our vulnerable populations.
And Senator Boniff, as I mentioned, I think those discussions are coming as well. Senator Stump.
Madam Chair and members, you know, I think a vote for these bills is really a vote to diminish the power of the legislature. I mean, why would we want to pass legislation that takes the power away from the whole purpose of why you ran for office? And these bills are a reflection that the legislature just didn't do its job. When those bills were vetoed, those appropriations bills were vetoed by the governor, it was the system breakdown was that we should have come back and we should have had a special session, and we should have gotten another budget together, and we should have worked it out with the governor. I mean, we're part of the team that puts the budgets together, and we can't do it ourselves. We realized that last year when the governor vetoed the bills. We need him. He needs us. We can't appropriate money as a legislative body right now into the future. I mean, it seems ridiculous to try to put the whole state on autopilot. I mean, if we went into another deep recession, and here you have all these bills out there saying, well, we can't do this, we can't do that. I mean, I think a vote for these bills is a vote to kind of diminish the authority that the legislature, that the Constitution gave us when we were elected.
Well, Senator Stump, as you mentioned, we did pass bills last session that would have covered all of these things
right during
the regular session, and the bills were all vetoed. And we would have been willing to come back before a shutdown. We were asking to come back before a shutdown to take up these issues again. But the governor said he would not call us back in special session until we had an agreement on absolutely everything. So some of these things were left hanging out there, and programs and people were affected, and not always in a good way, obviously, because of that. And I think that, you know, other governors in the past, I remember I was here in 2005, and we ended up with a partial shutdown. And we were in session in June. The governor had called us back, and we were working on these bills. And I remember specifically, for example, passing the environments bill on June 29th or 30th, and the state parks stayed open. And, you know, that didn't happen this time, but it wasn't because we weren't here on June 30th, because our whole caucus was here on June 30th, hoping the governor would call us back so we could get these bills passed. And it didn't happen. And so the special master got to determine a lot of these issues, and I think that there was a lot of frustration over that. And so now we're saying, yes, we want some of these things to continue. Had we had the opportunity by June 30th, we would have voted for these things. We had voted for these things to continue previously. So I think that's part of the issue here. And you're seeing authors who were frustrated by that process, and they just want to make sure that doesn't happen again. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was sitting here biting my tongue and not wanting to resurrect and having to discuss, but you handled it very well of describing some realities and the frustrations of the end of session and the inability to even negotiate. And it's, you can't negotiate with someone who doesn't want to negotiate at that point. So, but I have a specific question just for understanding on the language in the bill, if you don't mind. And I think your witness that is prepared may be the one to answer it. But as the appropriation is allowed to be made to the Commissioner of Management and Budget for various functions, it said, as necessary, the commissioner may transfer a portion of this appropriation to other state agencies to support carrying out these functions. Is that something unique to the zoo? And could you help us understand that that's what it means?
Senator DeCryfer, Mr. Appetz.
Madam Chair, thank you. My name is John Appetz. I'm with the law firm of Messerly and Kramer, and we represent the Minnesota Zoo Foundation, which is the fundraising arm of the for the Minnesota Zoo. And just for a little bit of clarity, the zoo raises about 70% of the money that it generates, about 70% of the revenues that operate the zoo that are used for its operations. So in short, what the senator is doing and what is proposed in this bill is to provide the backroom operations, if you will, the back office operations that the state provides to run the zoo. In short, what happens is revenues come from parking, comes from admissions, comes from catering, comes from the other sorts of activities that we have at the zoo, and that money then goes into a special fund. You'll see that in Subdivision 1, that's existing law, and it says, and what the court said, it wasn't even the special master, it was the judge said, that money's already appropriated to the zoo on an ongoing basis. So that's the distinction in this bill, if you will, that money comes in, goes into a special fund, and it is appropriated for the zoo's operations. That's what makes this a little bit different than the other proposals that perhaps you'll see. What this bill then does is say the state operations that are necessary to get that money from the state treasury to pay the employees of the zoo to feed the animals to do the rest of it is appropriated and is MMB will function to provide those operations. That was sort of a question in the shutdown. Even if the law found that, indeed, the money was appropriated on an ongoing basis to the zoo, were we going to be able to get our hands on it in the first place? What this does is clarify that is an obligation of the state. Now, specifically to your question, I don't mean to belabor it, I believe there are other sorts of functions that go on in other agencies that help the zoo continue its operations. And I believe that what this says is those operations, so that the zoo can continue to operate, will be appropriated as well.
Okay. And Senator Olson, does that come out of that same fund?
Mr. Appetz.
Or is that a little bit clouded with, is that general fund money, or is that the funds that you have deposited in the special fund?
Senator Olson, the way I'd read this is that would be general fund money. That wouldn't be appropriations from the special fund that's set aside for zoo proceeds. From zoo so proceeds.
Thank you. I see, Senator. Thank you, Madam Chair. There are the uniqueness of some of these. I think is important for us to have a special discussion over, because it would be right now, even with the two that we've discussed. How do you write a general policy that kind of covers this? I think there's nothing wrong at all with dealing with some of these unique ones, and I think the more that we examine them, the better we'll be able to make a judgment near future time as to whether there are some general principles that could be put in place or whether this is the approach that we should take.
Thank you. Senator, well, actually, I don't know if we want to go back. We had Senator Newman and Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam.
But we're trying to get back to the bill. So
I understand that, but I do have to comment on some of the comments that Senator Stump made. Specifically, I'm one of the frustrated senators from last year. I went through the shutdown in 2005. And I will tell you that, in my estimation, we did our job. We passed the bills. And then we stood by powerlessly when the governor refused to call us back into special session. So to blame the legislature for failing to being called into special session is just not accurate. So and I continue to believe, I believed in 2005, I believed last year, and I believe now, that the executive branch does not have the authority to appropriate money out of our treasury. I don't believe the judicial branch has the authority to appropriate money out of our treasury. I don't think a special master has the constitutional authority to appropriate money out of our treasury or spend money. Only the legislature does. So I will support Senate File 1844, and I'm going to likely support the other bills, simply for the reason that we are now back with the legislature that is appropriating money. Whether you agree with the specific terms of 1844 or not, at least we're back in a position where it's the legislature that is appropriating and spending money out of the general fund and not the other two branches of government, who specifically do not have the authority to do that.
Senator Goodwin, did you still have a comment?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm thinking about last year, too, and I don't want that to ever happen again. And it was very difficult for the people in small businesses particularly. But I also think about the over 8 weeks that we had last year where we didn't deal with any budget issues in the time when we had the worst shortfall of any time we've ever had a shortfall in the state of Minnesota, and one of the worst shortfalls as a percent of our budget in the nation. So still we spent over 8 weeks dealing with social issues rather than the budget, which could have been that the governor would have got the budgets a lot earlier. You could have sat down with the governor and talked about these issues and gotten them resolved and prevented a shutdown. And I would hope that at least with last year's method of business that we would learn from that and that next time we won't end up when we could be working. And I remember us begging, let's get that budget before us. Let's talk about the budget. And instead we had all these other issues that could have been handled this year. So we could have prevented that shutdown with a little more work on the part of the legislature and a little better respect for turning those budget bills over to the governor before the very end of the session, and then expecting that he should just when he had sent messages all along saying this is something that I don't approve of, this is something that I won't sign. So the legislature basically knew that he was going to veto those bills and yet didn't make a real effort to get that business done earlier when they should have. So
Senator Goodwin,
I hope we learn from that, and we don't need these kind of bills to do this.
I know there were other issues brought up during the last legislative session, but some of us were working on the budget continuously. And it was a very big challenge coming in to the session with a $5.2 billion deficit. And it did take most of the months of the legislative session to try and get the bills together. And I don't think that was unusual under the circumstances that we had, that it was May before we actually had those bills on the floor. So it was really a tough year. It was, we hope we never have to face that again either. And certainly we're turning the corner. Our cash flow account, our budget reserve account is back in the black and filled. And we're busy repaying the school shift right now. And so it's, I hope we never see that happen again. But
Madam Chair,
if it does, we want to be prepared to have the least effect on the programs and people in our state as possible.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm sure you were working hard, very hard in the budget, behind the scenes. But my complaint is that it wasn't open. It wasn't in committee's process that we worked on those budget bills together. I saw nothing in the three committees, finance committees I'm on, for almost 8 weeks on the budget. And I'm glad you were all working so hard behind the scenes, but the public wasn't involved in that discussion, and neither were the members of the committees. And I'm just hoping that we learn from that, that we don't leave the most important business for the very last minute when we had such a huge problem
Madam
to
Chair,
resolve, and that we do keep our government open to the public, too.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I just can't let that pass. I think there many of us in education, we spent a lot of hours on doing this, and we had absolutely no willingness when most years you work out these differences in the course of a conference committee. That's why you hold a conference committee, and that's when the governor often gets engaged and indicates what things he can live with and he won't live with. And either that authorizes the commissioners to engage in it. That step was missing. I've been through a lot of these, but it was missing. And can we stop rehashing this? I don't have another spleen to give up this year.
Madam Chair.
Let's get on with the business.
Is this question to the bill? Okay. I think we are going to move forward. Senator Bonna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I originally raised my hand to have a question to the bill, but I will also comment that during this discussion, Senator Nenow tweeted that actually the shutdown a DFL ploy, and then he said yes. And so, number one, it wasn't. So on the record, each of us, the reason why we're having this heated
discussion.
Madam
Chair, what does that have to do with the bill? Excuse me.
This is Senator Perry.
Senator Bonner has the floor.
I do. Thank you. So, Madam Chair, the reason why this discussion is so heated is because each of us did care so deeply about that shutdown. You know, that is what the people in our district cared about. That is what we came. I actually ran in a special election in 2005 because I was upset about how the last shutdown was handled. And so I think that number one, I don't think it's appropriate to tweet about members in committee, and I would ask that people refrain from doing that. And number two, I think that to assume a motive for what happened last year is not respectful because it isn't the truth. And so with regard to the bill, I have a question for Senator DeCruyff. Senator DeCruyff, I had mentioned the possibility of feeding the animals versus keeping the zoo open just for general public coming and going in terms of putting that back on, as some people called it, autopilot. Are you open to having that distinction?
Senator DeCruyff.
Madam Chair and Senator Bonoff, I think if you look at what happened last year with the special master, what this bill is essentially doing is agreeing with the special master that we should not only feed the animals but keep the zoo open. And what I would propose to do is just agree with the special master. Let's not put that on their table if it ever happens again. Let's just allow the zoo to stay open and not have to put this on their table, because if they would do the same thing next time, they would just agree with what we have already done anyway. So I would respectfully suggest that we just move forward with this bill as is, and agreeing with the special master, and I would propose that.
Thank you.
Senator Magnus was next.
Yes, thank you. Well, Madam Chair, I'm looking at the fiscal note, and I know it pretty much helps me make my decision. It says the impact of this bill to the state is no cost, and it, number one. And number two, this would prevent the state from realizing a loss which would occur if the zoo was closed as a result of a state shutdown. And you look further into the description in the fiscal note, which I'm looking at, and the zoo revenues for the first 4 months of the fiscal year gives the zoo a positive cash flow. And I thank Senator DeCruyff for bringing the bill forward, because it just makes sense. Why in the world would we not vote for a bill That does that.
Revenues feed the animals.
You know, why would we go into this shutdown nonsense and end up costing ourselves more money? Where's the fiscal committee? We ought to be looking at that. Madam Chair, I chaired the Ag Committee, and last year the Ag Bill, Finance Bill, was the only one passed and signed by the governor. And then Easter Passover break came and the wheels fell off the truck. And I think many of you that are committee chairs and other senators were probably seeing the same frustration I was when I would call the agencies in mid-April. I think the session was supposed to end in late May, right? Would ask them for some help and on fiscal issues and other committees I was on, and ask them for help putting together bills, and they said they were too busy because they were working on the shutdown in mid-April. That's the facts, Madam Chair. I respect Senator DeCry for bringing the bill forward. I know that Senator Cohen likes to have his vote recorded, so I would ask for a roll call vote. Madam Chair, I would move that we pass Senate File 1844 to the floor, to the General Register.
On that motion, is there further discussion? Senator Cohen?
Well, since Senator Magnus referenced myself, let me just make a couple comments, and they are general comments. I do think it's unfair. Senator Olson and Senator Magnus, as folks who are respected in this place, finance chairs, have expressed frustration with what happened last year. I just think I cannot let it go unsaid that the governor, I think, was highly concerned by what he saw as intractability on his part, on the part of the folks he was dealing with. He saw that intractability and was very concerned. And I think it's a two-way street relative to that, that this was not simply a time when the governor left the process as that's my phrase, as suggested, I think, by Senator Magnus and Senator Olson. And I don't want to get into a lengthy debate about what took place last spring. Obviously, as a minority member, I was not there on a day-to-day basis in that respect as a chair was. But I do think the governor has a story to tell, too, about what he viewed as the intractability. Second.
Senator Cohen. I know. Are you going to address the motion on the bill? Well, we want to get back to it. We're running out of time.
Madam Chairman, yes, I'm going to address the motion in a second. My last general comment is I was searching for, going back several years ago, because I do think it's relevant to all these bills, what one of the political leaders said at the time, and I guess this was on NPR, it seems to me that a continuing resolution idea institutionalizes gridlock, maybe institutionalizes and supports not being able to make a decision. That was Governor Plenty in 2005. Addressing Senator Magnus's comment directly, I intend to vote no on all these bills, not necessarily because I would disagree with the objective of what each of the particular bills attempts to accomplish, but because I think we need to take the broader look at the front end, not the back end. And so I think this is doing it a little bit backwards, and I think to be consistent with that, it would call, at least for myself, to vote no on the bills. Senator Magnus referenced my vote on this bill.
Madam Chair.
Senator Langsa.
Madam Chair, every one of these bills we pass, and there are others to come, lessens the pressure to get a budget. So I'm voting no on all of them until we can sit down in a statesman-like way and figure out a plan, a general plan to deal with shutdowns. And this does not do it. This encourages shutdown.
Any other comments? Is there anyone else who wanted to testify for or against the bill? If not, the clerk will take the roll.
Senator Bonhoff?
Yes.
Senator Cohen?
No.
Senator Fischbach?
Yes.
Senator Goodwin?
No.
Senator Hahn?
Yes.
Senator Higgins?
Yes.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Yes.
Senator Langseth?
No.
Senator Magnus?
Yes.
Senator Newman?
Yes.
Senator Nienau?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Perry?
Yes.
Senator Stumpf?
No.
Chair Roebling?
Yes. On a vote of 11-7, the motion does prevail, and Senate File 1844 will be placed on general orders. And Senator Kreitz, stay right there, and we will take up the next bill, 1551.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. Senate File 1551 is essentially put in place to allow electrical inspectors to keep working in the event of another state shutdown. Fees for the payment of electrical inspections are paid totally by permits, and there are no taxpayer money paying for this service. This inspection fund should continue to be made available in the event of another state shutdown. When electrical inspectors are not allowed to work, there are several hardships that should not be allowed to happen. Many of them include safety issues. When storms knock out power to homes and businesses, the system must be inspected before it's reconnected. Carnival and fair operators are required to have an inspection completed before operation. Electricity is dangerous, and we should not allow the state to stop electrical inspectors from performing their work when the funds are already in the account, paid by the projects that are to be inspected. We should never compromise safety for political purposes.
Thank you. And so this is a separate account that, in fact, members, this is the account that we were talking about that we've taken money out of for the general fund, I believe, just a couple weeks ago. There's a million and a half that comes out of it. Is it every year or every biennium? Every year. To go into the general fund. So the account is full and has, you know, has been able to pay its expenses, but because of the way we have things set up, it was not able to continue during that time. Senator Goodwin?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair and Senator DeCruff. I'm wondering what other fee-based, I know there are several other fee-based boards and funds that are not that are paid basically by the fees that go to those boards and funds and building contractors and the contractor fund and different things like that. So, can you tell me what other funds are fee based that might also be very important to keep open during a shutdown?
Senator Goodwin, perhaps our fiscal analyst has a better handle on that.
All right.
About what some of the other funds are that have full funding from their fees that we could consider maybe in the future.
Madam Chair, Senator Goodwin, the Construction Code Fund is similar to or is part of the State Government Special Revenue Fund where a number of fee-based licensure type of activity occurs. And forgive me, I don't recall all the licensed activities in the Construction Code Fund. This would simply continue one function within that fund. However, as you're aware, a number of the health licensing boards are also appropriated from the same fund where this account exists. The Construction Code Fund is actually an account in a fund where we have many licensed professionals paying fees. A distinction between this bill and the previous two, had existing statutory authority. Mr. Abbott's noted the current law that has the appropriation language of the ZOO's receipts. The Construction Code Fund, just like the health licensing boards, are direct appropriated by the legislature as part of the biennial budget. This would create an open appropriation for this function until such time as biennial appropriation bill replaced it. So this is something that is, by past practice, has been direct appropriated. And instead of continuing the statutory appropriation like the other bills, this creates an open appropriation, which is similar to a couple of the other bills that are coming on the agenda.
Well, Madam Chair, just to follow up on that, thank you for your response. I'm just wondering, and I understand that, that open appropriation issue and that this is a fee-based, but I know there are others, and that's what my question was. What others are there that are fee-based that that are important to keeping our public safe?
And can I just take a little crack at this? I believe that electrical inspectors almost always come from the state. There's some cities that provide it, but most inspectors, building inspectors, you know, the counties and cities have their own, but the state is called in for many of the electrical inspections. And I think that's why this had a bigger impact on this particular area. And maybe, Mr. Studinski, you would like to address that, but I believe that is the case, that local inspectors have authority in many of the other building code areas as well. Mr. Studinski.
Madam Chair, good morning. And my name is Bill Strasinski, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Electrical Association. You're correct. Most of the inspections are done by state electrical inspection contractors. Actually, they contract with the state of Minnesota to provide these services. There are some state employees as well who do these electrical inspections, but some municipalities, very few, ponderous number of inspections for life safety are done through the state of Minnesota. That's the importance and the reason we need this particular legislation.
Madam Chair.
Senator Goodwin.
I'm just wondering, what about OSHA inspectors? That's paid with workers' comp funds, and certainly OSHA inspectors are protecting the safety of working people. So would that be just as logical to put into this budget? These are the kind of conversations I think we need to have, because I know there are several funds that are fee-based that operate without general fund appropriations that we would really need to look at to see how we were going to protect the safety of our citizens in every way for during a shutdown.
Senator Goodwin, you know, point well taken. I think OSHA may be a federal fund.
And it's a state fund, too, Madam Chair.
And a state fund, too. And so, you know, those are things we can look at. I think members brought things that were very directly and dramatically affected by the shutdown, and that's why we're seeing these bills today. But certainly this is a discussion to be had as to whether maybe Senator DeCrive's bill can be amended to include all construction code areas at some point in time. But we know that this was very dramatic because the inspectors generally come from state-contracted electrical inspectors. And like I said, the other ones were able to continue operating because they have local building inspectors in almost all cases.
Madam Chair, just one correction.
Senator
on that.
Goodwin?
We do have state building inspectors as well who are responsible for construction construction problems and repairs and sick homes and, you know, inspecting homes that the local building inspectors have passed, and then those homes become a problem. They either get moldy or something happens to them or the repairs are done wrong, and then we have state building inspectors that go out and do those kinds of inspections. So,
Senator Goodwin, do you know if the special master had approved funding for those?
No, I don't know.
And if it's a concern, I would encourage you to look into it. Maybe you'd want to put a bill together on it, too. Are there any other
Madam
questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Langstedt?
The most calls I got during the shutdown were from truckers. They weren't able to get permits, so their trucks were just sitting there. So we really should have a bill to help them out. And one by one, what we're doing is preventing harm from happening during a shutdown. And I tell you, once that happens, how are you ever going to get a budget? The pressure is off.
Are there any other questions about this bill, Senator Ingebrigtsen?
No, I have nothing. I'd move Senate File 1551 to pass and go directly to the floor.
On that motion?
Roll call.
And roll call has been requested. Is there anyone in the audience who wanted to testify for or against? If not, the clerk will take the roll.
Senator Bonoff? Senator Cohen?
No.
Senator Fischbach?
Yes.
Senator Goodwin?
No.
Senator Hahn?
Yes.
Senator Higgins?
No.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Yes.
Senator Langseth?
No.
Senator Magnus?
Yes.
Senator Newman?
Yes.
Senator Nienau?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Perry?
Yes.
Senator Stump?
Oh.
Chair Roebling?
Yes. On a motion of 9-5, the motion does prevail. The bill will be placed on general orders. And Senator DeCrite, I know we're still waiting for a fiscal note, which we expect will be like the other fiscal notes that we've seen from your bills on Senate File 1843. But because it isn't here, and we're almost out of time, and Senator Gimsey's sitting here, and he may have some testifiers as well, I would really like to move forward with 1530. And then if we have time, but I think this is usually the end of our committee period, and Commerce is coming in at 10:30, we would promise you a hearing later if we don't get to it today.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, I would certainly encourage that State Park bill come forward because I think everybody can agree that that was one of the most highly contentious areas of the government shutdown, and I would like to discuss that in this particular committee.
And that would be our intention, Senator Ingebrigtsen. The fiscal note was not completed, and although we expect it to look very much like the other ones, we thought maybe if there was one that would wait, it would be that one.
Madam Chair.
Senator Cohen.
We don't need any more discussion about that. That bill's not in front of us now. Right?
That's right. So Senator Gimsey has in front of us
I love it.
Senate File 1530.
Right. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 1530 is a bill that provides continued funding for state road projects in the event of a general fund budget that isn't agreed to by the 1st of July of the given budget year. This bill includes, and I want you to understand this, only specific projects that have been contracted. The contracts have been signed, and the work has been authorized and appropriated within our trunk highway funds and within our transportation budget. These contracts and construction projects have been planned out for many, many years. The permits have been obtained, and everything has moved forward to the point where we are able to sign the contracts and move these projects forward. And also, these projects are funded not just in the current year, but are also planned and funded in future years. That is the way that transportation projects work. Some of them are very large projects that amount to hundreds of millions of dollars, and so it necessitates the need for funding that is ongoing and continuous in order to accomplish these projects. Unlike the general fund, transportation funding is constitutionally dedicated funding. It comes from the gas tax, registration fees, motor vehicle sales tax, and other sources that within our own state constitution make up the trunk highway fund and create the budget and the dollars for these specific projects. Halting these construction projects, unlike not having possibly the zoo open or the electrical contractors available, creates a whole another aspect when it comes to shutting these down and the impacts on our contractors and the 20,000 to 25,000 employees that were sent home during the shutdown period were directly affected by us on the shutdown and the lack of continued funding for this. Another important aspect of this is that the typically July 1st is at the prime of the construction season when our contractors are able to work. This is typically the type of weather that where they make the most progress, and we just need to continue to move these projects forward. And another aspect in which is different than probably a general fund allocation is that we end up having damages. And in our transportation committee, we are currently monitoring the damages and the construction shutdown costs that are completely unnecessary, in my view, because these are constitutionally dedicated funds. They aren't a part of the greater general fund discussion when it comes to budgeting and are truly outside of that whole arena and discussion. And I, as you can see by the fiscal note, it goes on the assumption that MMB has always been considered an essential service, and there is no general fund impact to the cost of continuing these projects. So So with that, Madam Chair, I would appreciate the committee's support on this, and I'll stand for questions.
Okay. Thank you. We also have two people who have signed up to testify, Margaret Donahue and Tim Workey. They'd like to come to the table, please. Welcome to our committee. Mr. Workey, do you want to begin?
Yep, Madam Chair, thank you. Good morning, committee members. My name is Tim Workey. I represent the Associated General Contractors. We're the state's largest and oldest construction trade association. I represent the folks that actually do the majority of the construction contracting in the state. Senator Gimsey did a really nice job of laying out what the major issues were, so I'm not going to get into a lot of detail. But basically, in terms of the claim process, we had 20 to 30 of our members, general contractors, affected by the shutdown, who held, in some cases, multiple projects. And so not only do they have multiple projects, but there may be multiple claims filed on these projects. Somewhere in the neighborhood between 100 and 150 claims probably that the state is now working its way through. And those claims will have significant cost to the state once they are resolved. Senator Gimsey mentioned construction in the prime timeline in terms of lining up with the state budget. July obviously is the most productive month in the construction schedule. We ended up taking 20 days out of that construction schedule last month. And when you look at construction, it is inherently schedule driven. So it compounds itself. If you cannot, for example, you cannot pour a bridge deck before you have the bridge piers in place and positioned. So if you get out of schedule, it can significantly affect the construction schedule and its work. Construction jobs. We have a very difficult economy, as everybody knows, and construction jobs are an important part of that economy. The state has lost 50,000 construction jobs since 2006. The shutdown occurred at a very difficult time in that marketplace. Construction workers rely on a full 8-month schedule in order to get their hours to pay their fringe benefits, their, in particular, their health care. And what we saw was that a number of those folks were unable to reach those thresholds, provides for additional drag in the economy. Also, those construction jobs are portable, meaning that they could leave the state, go to chase other opportunities around the country. And when those highly skilled jobs leave the state, sometimes they don't come back. And so I think that's an important point. Lastly, in regards to the effect on our membership, we're seeing several firms close their doors because of the effect of the shutdown and the claims process. But of particular concern, and we noted this on the front end of the shutdown in working with Senator Gimsey and Representative Beard to prevent highway projects from being impacted, that we said the first firms to feel the impact would be the smallest and those most unable to weather a cash flow shortage. That creates other problems within the transportation industry and let alone the economy. Typically, these smaller firms are women-owned or minority-owned firms. They cannot weather a $30,000, $40,000 cash flow that they may be owed from the shutdown, from the claims process, and they will go out of business. That will affect, going forward, the ability to reach DBE goals or women-owned goals on projects. We are very concerned about that, how that is going to play out in the future. So we're very supportive of Senator Gimsey's bill. We think it has merit, and I appreciate your attention and would stand for any questions. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Workey? Senator Goodwin?
Quick question, Madam Chair. And Mr. Workey, I was wondering, you might have said it and I missed it, but does this include then keeping open bridge inspections?
Mr. Workey?
Madam Chair, Senator Goodwin, I believe Senator Gimsey's bill would allow that because it would fund the essential operations of the department. Maybe he would be better able to speak to that.
Senator Gimsey.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Goodwin, if you're talking about routine inspection work, that's not included in this bill. This strictly applies to the construction contracts and the employees needed to do the inspections on those construction contracts. Now, if there's a bridge involved in that process, in the construction process, certainly those inspectors would be involved in that. But this is a very limited scope bill in that all we're trying to do is keep those projects open that are we are under contract and have an obligation that and a commitment to these contractors to keep the work moving on.
Thank you, Senator Ginsey.
Ms. Donahue, did you want to say something?
Thank you. For the record, I'm Margaret Donahoe with the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. I would just add a couple quick comments. Our members also include local governments, transit systems, contractors, suppliers, everybody in transportation. Obviously, our members don't want to see any more government shutdowns. They're very disruptive. We need these services to continue. In 2005, ongoing highway projects were deemed essential services and were not stopped. So there is some precedent for this. As Senator Gimsey noted, it's a very narrowly crafted bill, so it really only applies to those projects that are ongoing, that are have work being done on them. There are issues around that, and the biggest one is the cost. And so the cost means that millions of dollars in additional costs will be incurred for these particular projects. That has to come out of the Trunk Highway Fund. That means there are fewer dollars for other highway projects and other highway needs. So it's a very big concern for our members when we have such an underfunded highway system to begin with that now we're having additional unnecessary costs because of something like this. So we would definitely not want to see this happen in the future to keep just the projects that are started going in the future. And also local governments also had some costs related to this, and some local projects were also shut down because of the situation in July. And that just means more of a burden on local property taxpayers to have to pay more for these same highway projects. So we just want to be in support of Senator Gimsey's bill, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Donahue. Any questions for the witnesses? Anyone else in the audience who wants to testify for or against the bill? Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move Senate File 1530 be recommended to pass and go to the floor, I believe.
Yes, it's already been
and
to the Transportation
floor.
Committee.
Madam Chair, I would request a roll call vote.
Any other discussion on that motion? If not, the clerk will take the roll.
Senator Bonhoff?
Yes.
Senator Cohen?
No.
Senator Fischbach? Senator Goodwin?
Yes.
Senator Hahn?
Yes.
Senator Higgins?
No.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Yes.
Senator Langseth?
No.
Senator Magnus?
Yes.
Senator Newman?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Perry?
Yes.
Senator Stumpf?
No.
Senator Nienau?
Yes.
Chair Roebling?
Yes. On a vote of 10 to 4, the motion does prevail, and Senate File 1530 will be placed on general orders. Thank you. And I know the other committee is gathering outside the door, and so we will lay on the table Senator DeCrise, Senate File 1843 to be taken up at a future hearing. And members, we don't have any more hearings this week. We know that we won't have any tomorrow for sure, but we are not having a meeting Thursday morning either. So we'll have one next Tuesday, and so stand by to see what's on the agenda for that. But with that, the meeting is adjourned.